Welcome to the Quest Podcast, proudly presented by the Muscular Dystrophy Association as part of the Quest family of content. I'm your host, Mindy Henderson. Together, we are here to bring thoughtful conversation to the neuromuscular disease community and beyond about issues affecting those with neuromuscular disease and other disabilities and those who love them. We are here for you to educate and inform, to demystify, to inspire, and to entertain. We are here shining a light on all that makes you, you. Whether you are one of us, love someone who is, or are on another journey altogether, thanks for joining. We've got a great conversation for you today. Now let's get started. Parenting is one of the toughest jobs on the planet. It's also, in my opinion, one of the best, most rewarding, incredible things you can do. And today we're inviting you in to listen to our coffee talk about our journeys through motherhood when a neuromuscular disease is also part of the equation. Each of our stories is different and we hope will bring you joy and encouragement. Please know this conversation is specific to our own personal journeys and is not intended to be used as medical advice or medical fact for anyone other than the individuals involved. Now let's kick things off with some introductions. Sam, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure, I will go first. My name is Samantha Shabilski. I'm a mom with SMA type 3, so spinal muscular atrophy. I use a power wheelchair full-time. I'm no longer ambulatory. And yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Okay, great. Erin, how about you?
Okay, my name is Erin Pieper. I'm 34. I'm a single mom to a 9-year-old. And I have a disease called Friedreich's ataxia. You can call it FA for short. It's inherited and affects some of the body's nerves. It's caused by a gene defect, and it's inherited from both parents. So both my parents are carriers, but they don't show signs of it. So they didn't even know about FA until I started having symptoms and then went through the line of doctors and diagnosis, and then it was learned that it was a genetic disease. So I'm living with that, and I use a wheelchair at this point full-time. I did gradually go from, like, a walker to using a wheelchair, like, part-time, but now I just use it full-time. So that's pretty much it.
Great. Well, thank you both so much for that. Just because I am also a mother and a member of the neuromuscular disease community, I'll just go ahead and say also, I do have spinal muscular atrophy as well, type 2. So I was diagnosed when I was about 15 months old. And we became parents through adoption. So I'm here also to kind of share a little bit about my story as I guide us through the conversation. So it sounds like both of you have one child each. Did I get that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes, that's correct.
Great. And remind me, Erin, you said yours is 9?
Right. I have a son, Eli. He's 9.
Okay. And Samantha, remind me how old yours is?
Yep. I have a daughter named Scarlett who is 4.
I love that name, Scarlett.
So
oh my gosh. And 4 is such a fun age.
It is.
She keep you on your toes, I bet.
Oh, for sure. Yes. I'm very busy with her.
Yes. That's amazing. Well, you know, I'm going to kind of just jump right in here. And, you know, this is a meaty subject, and it's something that, of course, has to be approached, you know, on a person-by-person basis. You know, parenting is so personal anyway that, you know, becoming a parent and that whole journey, you've really got to consider your own circumstances and what the best way for you to become a parent is, if that's your journey. But Erin, did you grow up always wanting to be a mother? Is that something you always thought you would do?
I did, yes. Whenever I was at the famous question, what do you want to be when you grow up? I always had kids in mind. So from a very young age, that was definitely something I wanted. And yeah, it used to be like 4 or 5 kids.
Oh my God.
But now that I have one and that I have FA, I'm like, nope, one's fine. That's it.
Yes. I honestly, so it sounds like we all each have one child apiece. And I honest to goodness, my hat is off to anyone who has more than one, because it's a lot of work.
Totally agree.
Samantha, what about you? Did you always want to be a mom?
I did. I grew up as the oldest of 5 kids. And so I was always helping raise them, helping take care of them. Loved playing house, loved having dolls.
Yep.
It was just always something I wanted to do for sure.
Okay, so fun. Yeah, yeah. You mentioned playing dolls. I also grew up, you know, just always assuming that I would be a mom. And my sister and I grew up, you know, swaddling the baby dolls and feeding them their bottles and all of that good stuff. So Samantha, do you want to go first and just sort of talk about your journey? What factors influenced your decision on how you decided to be a mom and how it all went down, so to speak?
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. I graduated college and I moved away from home. I lived in Texas for a while, both in Dallas and San Antonio, and then moved to Phoenix all for my job. I worked as a biotechnologist.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So looking at cells for cancer, actually a lot of pap smears for female clients. And I wasn't sure for a period of time whether I was going to be a mom or not. I kind of have let like those ableist thoughts kind of take over. Like, maybe you aren't drawn enough to do this. Maybe your physical limitations are too much. Maybe this just isn't in the cards for you. And so I kind of been thinking about that for some time. But all of a sudden, we were closer to my husband's family. So we had some more support. We had bought a house there. We had just kind of settled in. And at that point, I was like, I think maybe this is what I would like to do. I also was 28 when I got pregnant with Scarlett. And so I guess that biological time clock kind of like kicked in for me. Like, you know, if you want to do this, maybe you should do it now. Which it's horrible to say, but we all have it and it does show up. So that I guess is kind of what went into it initially. Uh-huh. And I guess being a first-time parent, you kind of get the joy of not knowing everything going into it.
Right.
so you're kind of naive to go into things.
That's true.
SMA is a genetic disorder where, similar to FA, both parents have to be carriers in order for your child to have a chance of having it. Mm-hmm. So my husband and I talked about it, and we decided we were going to do carrier testing on him and see where that led us before we made any big decisions. So we did the carrier testing, which is not paid for by insurance. That's out of your own pocket. And he turned out not to be a carrier. So we didn't have to explore other avenues initially. So the other option would have been to do IVF had he been a carrier and then selecting embryos for that. I know that's not everyone's like desire to even do carrier testing or take that on. Which is fine. That's a choice. This is just the choice we made. So I don't want to write that off. Like, this is how you have to do it. Of course it's not. This is just how I did it.
It's information that's available if you want it. And I think that it's amazing that we live in a day and an age where you can get that information available to you. So it sounds like, were you pretty much looking at trying to have a child biologically right from the get-go, or did you consider other options?
Yeah, initially I wanted to do it myself. Uh-huh. I was open to other options if this wasn't going to work out for whatever reason.
Uh-huh.
But my doctor gave me the go ahead. He said, you know, you're healthy otherwise, other than having SMA. And so if you want to start trying, you can. I'm willing to take this on. And so we did, and we were pregnant like a month later. So I guess it was awesome. Like, yeah, meant to be.
That's wonderful. Well, I want to come back to you, and I want to talk some more about, you know, some of the medical considerations and things that you talked about with your doctor. But first, let me go to Erin. Erin, do you want to talk us through what your journey looked like to, I guess, to decide, because you also had a biological child. Mm-hmm. And so let's talk about what got you there.
Yeah, sure. So I like to say that my pregnancy was kind of a spontaneous thing. It was not planned. I'm not married, so I was more so in like a brief relationship at that point.
Uh-huh.
So when I found out I was pregnant, you know, I had all the what I was going through my head.
Yeah.
I was still at that point coming to terms of FA myself, because I'd only been diagnosed about a year at that point.
Oh, okay.
So I was still walking independently, but if you were around me for a long period of time, you would probably notice that, like, my gait looked a little different.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I was still, like, processing it. I was kind of in denial for a little bit about talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So my child's father actually didn't even know I had FA.
Okay.
So once I had a feeling, hey, surprise. then I had to drop the other bomb that I had to pay.
Uh-huh.
So he knew nothing about it. So, you know, he's still probably coming down from a little bit of shock about pregnancy.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm trying to explain FA, and it was a lot. And like Sam had said, getting tested, it was all out of pocket. So we definitely weighed that option. He probably wanted to do more than I did, because to me, it just, I was like, well, I'm pregnant, I'm going to have this child no matter what. But we did go through the process of getting him tested. But for some reason, I don't know how this happened, but they ran his test wrong. So we never got a clear answer.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so for Eli to have FA, he would have to get it, the carrier, from both parents.
Mm-hmm.
So since I have FA, Eli definitely will get the carrier gene from me since I already have it.
Uh-huh.
So it's up to Eli's dad whether he's a carrier or not. So if he were a carrier, Eli would have a 50% chance. If he's not, he's good. So
okay.
But we never went and redid it. I talked to my neurologist a lot about it. And he was like, you know what? Like, you're probably going to stress yourself out.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's say, for example, Eli's dad tests positive. You still will not know for certain if Eli has it.
Right.
And they're like, you're just going to worry yourself. Say, he's like, why don't you wait until Eli is, you know, when he's walking a little better and whatnot, if you notice anything off, then just get him tested.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad I took that advice, because I've never even, it's not come to my mind once.
Yeah.
And Eli's 9, so I would like to think that maybe I would notice something by now, but I really don't, you know, it's all up to God, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that it's proven to be, you know, sort of a low stress consideration for you. And, you know, obviously we will, you know, think good thoughts and send all of the positive juju your way.
Thank you.
But he'll continue to be healthy. I'm curious though. Well, actually, before I ask my next question, I guess I'll share what my journey looked like. I suspect that I'm a little bit older than the two of you probably. And so I think that, you know, when I was looking at becoming a mom, it was like 17 years ago. I'm going to date myself a little bit. And so, you know, you guys all know that, you know, they're finding things out about our condition all the time. And so when I was looking at expanding my family, you know, my husband and I had been married for about 2-3 years, and we were beginning to talk about it. And I had told him, you know, because doctors pretty much my whole life had said that they really didn't think that it was in the cards for me with my particular condition. They didn't know as much about, you know, what circumstances it would be passed on and, you know, sort of the risk to me. And so all of the advice that I got along the way was that it was better to err on the side of caution and look at other ways to become mom. So I had that conversation with my husband, and we had always kind of thought that when the time came, we would adopt. And so after we'd been married a couple of years, we started going down that path. And ultimately, we adopted a daughter from China who was 5 when we adopted her. And, you know, we decided to look for an older child because there was such a need to place older children. And also, you know, I was concerned too about my ability to do things like change diapers and pick her up when she was crying and, you know, things like that, that I desperately want to ask you guys about, you know, how you navigated those things, because that was sort of, you know, one of my thought processes that deterred me from, you know, going the biological route. And I will say that I have the most incredible daughter on the planet. She's 20 now, about to be 21. And, but that was our journey. So a little bit different than what the two of you, the way that you all became moms. Mm-hmm. So Sam, I'd love to go back to you. And, you know, like I said, my doctors were not keen on the idea of me with SMA. And I kind of wonder if the type of SMA that you and I each had, I have SMA 2, and I think you said you have SMA 3. And right, I wonder right. if that may have had a bearing on, you know, all this to say, I think, you know, ask your doctor if you're listening to this.
Yes.
And get some good advice. But, you know, what are your thoughts and what kind of conversations did you have with your doctor about what the health implications could be to you?
Definitely. Looking back on my journey with my OBGYN, I think I could have done a better job, and maybe he could have said, you know, I don't really have the expertise to really take this on necessarily. He did a phenomenal job. Everything worked out. However, looking back on it, I don't think either one of us were very informed. It was kind of like we were just both leading each other through the dark kind of situation. Since my SMA had been stable for most of my adult life at that point, mm-hmm. I had really aged out of any of my healthcare resources. So I hadn't been to any specialists within probably like the past 10 years when I got pregnant. Mm-hmm. I had gone to like my pediatric specialist prior to graduating college and leaving the state. But uh-huh. after that, I had never re-established care in any of those places. Uh-huh. So essentially what I did is I went and found a good OBGYN, not necessarily one who did high-risk cases or specialized in this or anything like that. And I just kind of said, this is what I'm going to do. Like, would you like to be a part of it? And he was yeah. like, sure. So I feel like if you're able to find those resources, you should, just for later on in the pregnancy.
Definitely.
I didn't have any complications or anything like that popped up, but I easily could have,
sure.
I believe, given sure. The circumstances.
So, absolutely. Were you on bed rest at all?
I was not. I actually worked full time up until like the day before my scheduled C-section.
Ooh, you're a worrier.
I know. Wow.
I know. So it was, and I don't know if that's good advice either. It was really hard on my body at the end, and I needed a lot of help. Luckily, I had like great coworkers helping me at work with whatever I needed. My husband worked nearby, so he was able to come to my job to like help me use the restroom or transfer me, because at the end I couldn't transfer myself at all just due to the weight gain, which you have with pregnancy.
Yeah.
So it was interesting. It was more out of being naive that this all occurred. I don't know if I would go about it the way I did, but that's how I did do it.
Well, and I mean, clearly it worked out for you, and I'm glad that everything turned out so well and you didn't have, you know, complications. I'm curious though, did your doctor put any complications on the table that you needed to watch out for?
Not necessarily. He was like, you know, like you're healthy otherwise, like my blood pressure was good. I didn't have gestational diabetes. The baby was growing properly. The only thing we were kind of iffy on was how I was going to deliver. Uh-huh. So was I going to be put fully under, or were they going to be able to place an epidural for anesthesia purposes?
Okay.
And ultimately, we decided on putting me completely under for the delivery, just because I had had a spinal fusion and I had rods. And all the hardware would have made placing an epidural very difficult.
Okay.
Also, my own medical, I don't know, fears, I guess, I much preferred to go under, which isn't always the case for people. I just, yeah, like my anxiety around medical situations is really, really high. So yeah. I was happy to go to sleep for that.
Yes,
to
wake up to a beautiful baby. I mean, yeah, hello.
Exactly. Like, it didn't seem that bad to me. I know that not everyone wants that experience,
sure.
But it was the safest, best option for my particular situation.
Right. Okay. And so, Erin, I know that you said that you had just been diagnosed a year before you found out that you were pregnant. What kind of conversations did you have with your doctors about what pregnancy was going to be like for you and any health implications that you needed to be aware of?
Yeah, for sure. So everything for me was kind of fast track since nothing was planned, and I was pretty much learning everything as they lied for me. But I knew, actually, my very first question to my neurologist when I was diagnosed, so that would have been about a year or two prior to pregnancy.
Uh-huh.
My first question was, could I have kids? Because that was something I always wanted in my life.
Yeah.
And he had said, yeah, a lot of people with FA have children, get married, have a job, like, you know, the average Joe kind of stuff. So he was like, definitely, it's in the cards for you. Don't feel too scared about that when the time comes.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew going into it when I found out that it probably wasn't going to be too difficult for me, because I really didn't have any other health issues even related to FA at that point, because later on, like, I can get like cardiomyopathy. Some people get diabetes. I mean, there's the list of things. So
Luckily
at that point, I didn't have anything. So I knew I was pretty healthy going into it. And sure enough, you know, when I went to the doctor and spoke to my neurologist, went to the OB and did all that checklist stuff, like, everything seemed to be okay. So I really wasn't too concerned. My only thing was, as my belly was growing, my balance was getting worse.
Oh, sure.
So I did have a really bad fall when I was about 2 or 3 months pregnant, and I felt like directly in my belly.
Oh, no.
So I freaked out, went to the ER, and everything checked out. But it was kind of at that moment where I was like, okay, you know, I need to stop being stubborn and look at an assisted device. Because at that point, I was still like, if things were getting hard, you know, I'd grab someone's arm, or kind of brush up against the wall, or grab railings. So it was just getting hard with a growing belly. So I started using a walker when I was about 3 or 4 months pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of that was just a huge learning curve for me, for everything. I mean, it was the FA, the pregnancy, getting ready to have a baby. I mean, everything was thrown at me. So I pretty much just learned as, you know, I was rolling with the punches kind of thing.
Yeah.
I used the walker for a bit. And I used that for about a couple of years after Eli was born. So I was still kind of, you know, standing upright. So if I was leaning, like, on a dresser, I could change his diaper standing up. I mean, obviously, I felt more safe when I would sit on my bed and do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I could, like, lean against the sink and kind of prepare food and clean and do whatnot. But obviously, as FA progressed, because it is a progressive disease, I started taking more advantage of the wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had another really bad fall, maybe 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I broke a rib. And ouch. That was super painful.
Yeah.
And so I used the wheelchair to get around while that was healing. So once that was kind of healed up, and I just got so used to using the wheelchair and mm-hmm. just felt safer using it and kind of got from A to B quicker. You know, using the walker was always like super tense and like looking around like, and I was fatiguing here. So here yeah. I am now and just using the wheelchair full time.
Yeah. And would both of you say that your health went back to the original state that it was after you had your babies, or do you feel like there were, you know, kind of long standing effects that maybe you didn't completely gain back the strength or the function that you had before?
So where it was, like when I delivered Eli, that was where it was, and then I progressed from that point. Okay. So I never went back. Okay. And that, I think that speaks a lot of truth with FA, because your nerves, like certain nerve endings that can like control coordination and whatnot, it's kind of like once the damage is done, you don't reverse and go back.
Yeah.
So that was me. It was that at that point, just getting worse.
Okay, I see. Samantha, what about you?
Yeah. For me, it was the waking at the end had caused me to stop transferring on my own. So to the toilet or to the shower became difficult by myself. And that probably went on for a few months in that time. And then after delivery healing, by the time I was able to get back to trying those things, I had lost too much of my muscle mass. Okay. Control, whatever you want to say,
yeah.
In order to go back to transferring on my own, I never regained it after that.
I see, and I asked that question just because, you know, I think there's so much about motherhood that is made up of sacrifices. You know, I think everything that we do is in the interest of our children. You know, our children come first. And in so many areas of our lives, we make sacrifices. And honestly, you know, I think that, you know, bringing your children into this world and, you know, having some long-term effects to your health is, you know, it's kind of the ultimate sacrifice, right? And maybe not the ultimate, but it's a big sacrifice. I think that your children one day will probably recognize and see what an amazing thing it was that you did.
For sure. I think, yeah, like hindsight, getting to view your parents as a parent is a pretty amazing thing.
It's true. Okay. So I have to ask some of these questions because I, not having gone through, you know, a pregnancy myself, I am so curious how you guys handle certain things. So the first one that I want to ask about is, I've heard so many people, so many of my own friends who don't have, you know, the same health conditions that I have, talk about the end stages of pregnancy and how hard it is to breathe and to be comfortable at night. Because I know that, you know, with our conditions, our respiratory systems can be, you know, a bit compromised anyway. So how did that all manifest for the two of you?
Yeah, so the end stages were super uncomfortable. I mean, I ended up, right after I had Eli, I bruised my coccyx, like that bone in your tailbone.
Oh.
So I felt that a lot, like my final month, like sitting, putting that pressure, like right on your tailbone.
Right.
That was a really, really uncomfortable sleeping. I mean, get out of here. I probably slept like on and off every 30 minutes. I mean, I could never find a comfortable position. And I have one of those, like, I don't even know what they're called now. I feel like pregnancy was so long ago. But it was like one of those U-shaped pillows.
Oh, sure.
That
yeah.
That kind of keeps you like on your side.
Yeah.
Because they always say you're not supposed to lay on your back when you're pregnant. And I'm a back sleeper.
Uh-oh.
So that was super hard for me. And I woke myself up a lot and I was laying on my back. And I was always trying to like shift my body over. And the weight of the belly was so hard.
Oh, uh-huh.
But yeah, in my other biggest like pregnancy side effect was the heartburn.
Oh, okay.
I could not pop enough tums. It was like candy to me. Like right at the end there, I mean, it was constant.
Wow.
And it was really bad too. I always felt like my esophagus was on fire.
Oh, bless your heart.
It sucked. But those, I guess, were like my biggest. I will say I was pretty blessed, I feel, that I didn't really have the rough of pregnancy. I mean, yeah, considering my FA and my physical limitations, but I mean, pregnancy overall wasn't horrible. I wasn't on bed rest or vomiting the entire time like some people. So.
I was going to ask about that too, because if you've got any mobility issues, any kind of sickness that takes you to the bathroom is kind of a challenge. So it didn't sound like you had much in the way of morning sickness, Erin.
Only in the first trimester. And I was like clockwork what they had said. They were like your first trimester, you're probably going to be very nauseous. But it's like once your second trimester hits, you're good. And that's exactly how it was for me. I don't think I ever really like actually got sick. But for the first 3 months, I was like nauseous about everything. And I would like get a really bad whiff of something. And I'd be like, oh my God.
Oh no.
Like my senses were super heightened and everything just kind of wanted to make me gag.
Wow.
But once the second trimester hit, I mean, I felt like a million bucks. I was like, man, they were right and really do feel bad. So good.
Did you have any super weird cravings?
Breakfast food and french fries.
Okay.
And it's funny because I still crave french fries to this day. That's like my favorite food. But I mean, all I ever wanted was like all the breakfast foods, like all of it.
Interesting.
Eggs, bacon, biscuits, like waffles, I wanted everything.
Okay. I mean, I crave those things as well. And I don't have breakfast Samantha, what about you? What about the breathing issues for you when the baby is big enough to kind of, you know, push up into your ribs and your chest area? Was that a problem for you?
Yeah, it got very uncomfortable at the end with the spinal fusion, not being able to like bend your spine or have that help in any way. It made her really, really pushing on my ribs. And your breathing is difficult. I mean, like shorter breaths, I guess you would say. It's hard to get a good deep breath at the end. But it's temporary. The end of pregnancy is just like really, really hard. You're very, very uncomfortable. And
And I think everybody would say the same thing.
Yeah.
Did you find anything that worked for you to help keep you comfortable so that you could sleep or any of that?
I did not love my pregnancy pillow. I hoped I would, but I did not.
Oh, I hear you love them or you hate them.
Yes, mm-hmm. I hated mine so much. So it was just like trying to position in bed better. But yeah, my husband would have to roll me. I couldn't roll myself back and forth. And just, yeah, I guess at that point, though, you're so exhausted that like sleep is welcomed most of the time at the end.
Yeah. That makes sense. Okay. The million-dollar question. I hear that like from day one, and I'm speaking from complete ignorance here and only things that occurred, but I hear that like from day one, you have to use the restroom like every 5 minutes, which for me would be a huge problem.
Yeah, it was a huge problem.
Yeah, but how did you handle that?
So I'm a terrible patient. I actually ended up being like really swollen because I wasn't intaking enough water.
Yeah.
Just because as a person with SMA, I don't drink that much.
Right.
Same. Because it's hard to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
And that's like a real life thing. Also, I was at work. I can't be like going to the bathroom constantly, like for an able-bodied person who can just run to the bathroom and take a few minutes, no big deal. But for me, it's a 15-20 minute process, right? To transfer, to transfer back, to get dressed, undressed. It's just a lot. So a lot of my pregnancy, I was like really swollen because I didn't drink enough.
Yeah.
And I found it actually more terrible at the end of my pregnancy. At the beginning, I was still able to transfer relatively well, but at the end, with all the weight pushing down, because you're sitting and not being able to transfer myself, the end was the worst for me as opposed to like the beginning. Yeah.
So, and you said that your husband worked close by, so he was able to help out.
Yeah. My job was fantastic about it all. Like sometimes my coworkers would help me and no one would say anything. And then we had a gender neutral bathroom, like in the gym where it was just like a one bathroom stall kind of a deal. And so my husband would come, he worked like a block away and he could transfer me in there and help me. And so
sounds like both of you had really understanding, accommodating employers.
Yes, immensely.
That's so great. Yeah,
I don't know what I would have done had I not.
I love hearing that. What about you, Erin? Was this an issue for you at all?
You know, it feels like so long ago. I kind of thought, but I don't feel like it was that bad in the beginning. If it was, my belly wasn't too big, then it wasn't, you know, terribly hard to go to the bathroom constantly.
Yeah.
Obviously, I had the physical limitations more so when I was 4 or 5 months pregnant, when I used the water. So it was still kind of a little easy to like get in the bathroom and just, you know, put my pants down and go and then walk out of the bathroom. So the process wasn't too bad, but definitely towards the end, I would say I could probably just live on the toilet.
Right.
Because, you know, the baby caves your bladder and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like you feel like you're going to go right then and there.
Yeah, seriously, I'm so sorry to any gentlemen who are listening right now, but this is what we go through.
Yeah, real life.
It's true. It's true. And Erin, I don't think I asked you, were you on bed rest at all during your pregnancy or did you?
No, I wasn't. No. And Eli was actually born on his due date. So what Sam had said, I had a lot of those concerns with my doctors about should we do like knock her out, do general anesthesia, do a C-section, do a natural birth. I mean, that wasn't my plan because that was what I wanted, a natural. But Eli didn't turn around like it. He was breech up until I went in.
Oh, a little stinker.
And I was induced 2 times.
Oh.
And I was only dilated 2 centimeters at the end of my second induction. And my doctor was like, why don't you just go home and let nature run its course. Yeah. And then, and I was like, no way. I've been here 48 hours. I made it this far. I'm not giving up. And she was like, well, we can break your water, but, you know, if we break your water and nothing is starting to happen with so many hours, we will either have to do a C-section or knock you out and take them that way.
Uh-huh.
And at that point, I was like, whatever. You know, I was so frustrated because I've been there 2 days and I was like, something needs to happen. So right when she broke my water, though, my contractions were full force and Eli flipped. And I mean, it was only a few more hours and I did get the epidural. And that okay. was something they were a little like leery about at first because, you know, anyone's at risk for nerve damage. But I already have a disease that, you know, I have tons of nerve damage.
Right.
So it was like, do I want to take that risk?
Ugh.
So I tried for like 2 or 3 hours without, but the pain was just so intense and I ended up giving it and getting it. And luckily, everything was fine, but I was only numb on one side, so I still could move, like, my right leg and my right toes.
Huh.
But I wasn't feeling the contraction pain, so I was like, well, no big deal. I don't yeah. care. At least I don't feel it. So, yeah, that was my story. And then I only had to push, like, 20 minutes, which, again, is pretty unheard of because a lot of people do that for, like, hours.
Uh-huh.
Even into a day.
Oh, yeah.
And I was so fortunate and I didn't push very long and he was there. So it all worked out in the end. But my OB probably wasn't that hip on FA. And obviously with me still coming to terms with it, I didn't really know how to fill it in because I didn't know what was going on.
Right.
So again, like, if I were to go through this process again, it would be so different.
Right.
You know, I'd make sure my OB was 100% knew what FA was. Maybe have high-risk doctors on call. Like,
yeah.
Everyone was just kind of scrambling because FA, no one really knew about it. The nurses didn't know about it, and they're, like, Googling it while I'm sitting there.
Uh-huh.
Like, oh, God.
Oh, my gosh.
This is not going to be good.
Yikes. Well, you two are my heroes. Seriously. I have 1,000 more questions I would love to ask you guys, but let me ask you about the actual, you know, experience of motherhood, because, you know, when they're babies and infants, so much of their care is so physical, you know, like I mentioned a little while ago, picking them up when they cry and changing their diapers and, you know, grabbing their hand before they stick it in an electrical outlet and all of those sorts of things. How, Sam, let's start with you. How did you sort of problem solve for those things? And how? What are your best tips for how you make those things work?
Yeah, the beginning is really hard. I knew going into it, I wouldn't be able to lift her or change her or do those aspects of her care. Like, I physically wouldn't be able to. So it was knowing that I would have to have my husband there or family or a friend pretty much at all times in order to have them be able to hand me her or set her on my lap or change her. So the first year is really hard because like I love the newborn phase, but it got so much better after she was about a year old for me to be able to be more of a parent in that regard to her. Yeah. So it was more like getting over myself in order to help her in the beginning, kind of a thing.
Oh, I love that you said that because I said before, I think, you know, it was a consideration of mine and one of the reasons why we adopted. But you're right. I kind of made that about myself and how I would feel. And and it's not about me.
No, it's not about me. So it was whatever I could do or who could ever help her in order to help meet her needs. So not everyone was going to do it exactly how I would. Not everyone was going to do it to my standards, but I had to be okay enough with it in order to get her the care she needed.
Yeah.
So I tried to be a part of everything that I could. So like washing bottles, I could do that. Like I had made like a whole washing station on my table since I couldn't reach the sink, and picking out the outfits and making sure we had all the supplies ordered. And so just like taking a different view of it, making sure I made all the appointments. Like I tried to take some of the burden off in the ways that I could from everyone else around me.
Yeah. That's so good, because you're right. So many things in life that are hard, period, it's all about your perspective. And I love that you were able to, you know, sort of shift your mindset and look at the things that were still in your span of control that you could own and be in charge of those things. I love that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, well, it was very hard, like very rewarding. And after the newborn stage, when Scarlett was finally able to like stand and walk and crawl and like be able to help me out with those things. So like I could communicate to her, could you crawl on the couch and I can change you there? Could you help me get you from point A to point B by stepping up on my wheelchair? And just learning one another in that way, it got so much better in that regard for me.
That's so great.
So it's just that first year that's really, really tough, and you need a lot of support to make it happen.
That makes sense. Erin, what about you? What about that first year, and how did you handle it?
Yeah, so my biggest thing that I really beat myself about was not being able to stand up when he was crying. So, you know, like most babies, they love to be when you're standing and holding them. So I would always have to sit and hold him. It would work for the most part, but you know, there was other people around. They could stand up, they would take him. But that, like what Sam had said, I would definitely take advantage of the things that I knew I could do. So even though they were small, they meant a lot to me. So being able to even like mix his bottles and clean them or do the laundry and fold his clothes, which a lot of people would just hate doing all that. But knowing I could do it was my participation. Was something I could do. So I took pride in that. And I could, you know, hold them, play with them, do everything, but it just was from a sitting down position. So before Eli walked, the house I was living at the time luckily didn't have any stairs. So it was just like a slab home. So when I would have to like maneuver him from point A to B throughout the house, I would put Eli in a stroller and I would just push him around that way. So that was like our thing. He was an early walker, so he was about 9 months. So that was what we did for like 9 months. If I had to like go from bedroom to bedroom or kitchen to bedroom, and I would just stroll him. And then I'm one of those pack and plays. So he slept next to my bed. So whenever he'd wake up, like every 4 hours to want to eat, change his diaper, he was right there so I could lift him up, put him in the bed with me and feed him and do that. But yeah, the more independent they get, it's easier. And I could just be a very, 9 could just be a very trying age. But I notice a lot more, and I think it's also just what they're into at that age.
Yeah.
Like right now, we have a lot of, I find I have a lot of struggle, even though the physical part isn't as hard, because obviously he can fend for himself and do a lot more. But, you know, they're always going through a phase, and you're always trying to catch up to what they're going through at that moment.
Yes.
So, yeah, there's always something, and there's always going to be a little challenge. And I think I'm just at that point where I'm like, I just need to accept every year there's probably going to be something that's challenging for me.
Yeah. Oh, I think every 2 weeks there's going to be something new that's challenging. And I don't know, I might be stereotyping, but I feel like little boys are so hard to keep up with.
Yes, and he is all over the place.
Yeah,
Yeah, that energy, I'm like, oh my gosh, if I could just bottle that up and give it to me.
Seriously.
I would be so productive and get yes, so many please. Things done. I mean, he is just all over, but he is so sweet. And, you know, obviously he's never known me not to have
right.
a fae or, you know, I used a walker in a wheelchair. So he's always seen that.
Yeah.
He needs to lend a helping hand or do something. He knows what I can and can't do, and he'll just hop right up and do it. I mean, there are times I could say he gets frustrated, and that could also be the age thing. You know, it's just like, do I have to do that? Or, you know, can you do that? Come on.
Right. Right.
But, you know, and I try to like understand those boundaries and be like, okay, am I asking too much? Uh-huh. I don't want to put too much burden on him either. Right. But, you know, this is our deck of cards. So,
exactly.
We're going to play them.
Exactly. I remember one time when my daughter was still pretty young, she was probably 5 or 6, and I took her to a movie. And this darn bag of Skittles that I bought for her to eat during the movie, between the two of us, we eventually got it open. But it was, you know, it's little things like that, you know.
Yeah,
I've
run into those problems all the time. So I know
oh, my goodness.
Mean.
Yeah. So let me ask you, what do you feel like have been the best parts of being a mother for you guys? Sam, let's start with you.
I think the best part of being a mom was like getting to know who my child is, like watching her grow and learn, and like just getting a front row seat to like getting to see who she will become eventually. And just kind of like being that support system for her and seeing where that goes. It's so exciting.
It's true. Before we adopted my daughter, I used to think all the time, you know, like, who is she going to be? You know, is she an athlete or a dancer or an actress or a mathematician? Or is she going to be funny or quiet? And it's so
exactly.
Watch it all unfold.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Erin? What's your favorite part of being a mom?
I have to go with what Sam said. That is, it's so rewarding to watch them grow.
Yeah.
And just the unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is so unconditional. Nothing will change it. You will always be. I was called my favorite deputy. So he will always be my favorite deputy. And it's wonderful to watch them grow and the faces they go through. It's just fun to be a part of.
It is. It's so good. And actually, Erin, I want to go back to something you said a second ago, because it's been such a big deal in my parenting journey. You know, I feel like raising children when you have a disability, I feel like you can't help but raise, you know, these sensitive, compassionate people that they turn into, you know, it's like you said a minute ago, I can remember, you know, my daughter being 7 or 8, and we would be out running an errand or doing something, and she would just reach for something and hand it to me, because she knew that I wasn't going to be able to reach out and get it myself. And she just knew, you know, they sort of instinctively take on, you know, not exactly a caretaker role, but they just become these compassionate people who know instinctually, you know, some of the things that you need, and they just do it without question.
And I love that. When I see Eli do that, I'm like, ooh. Like, really, he is super empathetic. Towards me, but to other people, he is. He's sensitive and a very sweet kid. And I think that's really going to help him, you know, when he grows older. And I can see that he's going to be quite the gentleman, knowing that he had, you know, he knows so much about helping someone.
Yeah, it's true. So I can't ask that question without asking the opposite question. Sam, what's been the most challenging part of being a mom?
I feel like for me, it wasn't like obviously, you know, you're going to have challenges as a mother and with your child and all of that. But I think it was like figuring out this new version of me after I had her, and like, I guess just kind of learning how to like let that past version go and welcome this new version, because I think you change so much, as much as people say, oh, I would never change after I had a kid.
Yeah, no, you do.
You do, for the better.
Yeah, your whole identity changes, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And it's for the good and it's for the better. And yeah. It's just kind of figuring that out.
That's really good. That gave me goosebumps a little bit. Erin, what about you? What's the hardest part of being a mom?
The physical limitations are very hard.
Yeah.
I feel I've done the best I can to accept that and come to terms on what I can and can't do, and to not dwell about the things I can't.
Mm-hmm.
And to just, you know, try and find the love in the things that I can do.
Yeah.
But there are times that it stings, you know, when Eli was like, come outside, and he wants me to play soccer with him, which I would say I can't. And I'll be like, can you just watch me? Which, you know, I enjoy, but sometimes the stings, you're like, oh, it'd be so nice to just get out there and run around with him.
Uh-huh.
Or something does happen, and like, just for an example, he's upstairs and I'm downstairs. Like, if I had to get up there, like, I can't just run up the stairs and be up there.
Right.
You know, it's like a whole process that transfer into a chairlift.
Yeah.
And then transfer into another wheelchair. So it's just those little things that people really do take for granted. And just, you can hop up and run out or skip and do something that, it really takes me a lot of time to do stuff. And
right.
There's times that I'm just very exhausted. And Eli will be like, will you come upstairs and go outside with me? And I'm like so tired that just the thought of even transferring from one chair to the next, I'm like, oh. But you do it for your kid, you know.
Of course.
Just again, it's not about you, and it's not his fault that I have Babe and I'm slower doing stuff, so I gotta be there for as much as I can be.
Right. And I'm sure in his own way, he already even understands and just knows that, you know, this is mom and this is how she gets upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think for me, apart from some of the things that you both said, I think for me, one of the hardest things about being a mom, and I think this is a total product of how much we love them, you know, but it's like, if my daughter has a bad day, I have a bad day, you know, because I want so badly for her to be happy and joyful and for everything to go her way. And if, you know, someone was mean to her at school, or she had a problem, or, you know, we had words before she left for school, or whatever, you know, if she had a bad day, I had a bad day. And it's, I think that was one of the hardest things for me, because
I feel that.
Yeah. You just want so much for them. So kind of in closing, what would you say to someone who's listening and maybe feeling ready to expand their family, and they're currently weighing their options around how to make that happen? What's your best piece of advice for somebody?
Yeah, I guess do your research as best you can. Make sure you have like the support system to go into this. And I'm always happy to be a support system for someone. I'm happy to answer any questions that people might have that are specific. But yeah, the internet has made networking so much easier now. And there are people who do it, and you can do it if you want to. And that's my advice.
Absolutely. And I am going to put some information about how to get in touch with each of you in the show notes. So if anybody wants to reach out, you can definitely look there. Erin, what's your best piece of advice for anyone looking to expand their family?
Pretty much what Sam had said. I mean, it really is just doing as much research and when you feel you've, you know, researched all your options and then you do it, go for it. I mean, but you're never going to be 100% ready.
Agreed.
And I think that's what is so beautiful about having children is you learn a lot as they grow.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing that, well, I can't say nothing, but some things that you think will go to plan may not.
Right.
And they might shift. So I just think you always need to have an open mind that when things don't go as planned, that you'll be okay.
That's so good. That's mm-hmm. really, really good because you're right. I think even if you have 16 children right now, I don't think you're ever ready for the next one.
Yeah, right.
You never quite know it all. Mm-hmm. So,
but you can be a little ready, especially when you have a disability. And if yeah. you want to go through a checklist and do genetics, or you want to make sure you're financially set at a certain point. I mean, those are things that you can do to get your ducks in a row, but you also need to leave room for the uncertain.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This has been so good. I've absolutely loved speaking with both of you. I want to give y'all the last word. Erin, any last thoughts that you would like to leave our listeners with, or what is next for you?
Well, I actually have a question for you guys, if you don't mind. So what are the different types? Like, you have type 2 and CMS type 3.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference?
It typically, and Sam, feel free to jump in, but it typically has to do with the age of onset.
Mm-hmm.
So I think type 1 tends, and I'm not a doctor, but type 1 I think tends to be the most severe and yeah. has the earliest onset. Usually, I think maybe even at birth, it's fairly prevalent or noticeable. Or detectable, I guess maybe I should say. Type 2 usually is diagnosed in infancy. Like I said, I was diagnosed at about 15 months. And then SMA 3 is usually diagnosed in adulthood. Sam, do you mm-hmm. have anything else to add?
That was pretty much on. And sometimes they go by milestones too. Like I was able to walk as a child and I wasn't diagnosed until I was about 6. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you, ladies, for answering that.
Absolutely. Happy to. So, Erin, yes, tell us about your book and when does it come out?
Yes, my book is called Dismantling the Disability. It comes out February 22nd. So it's pretty much my life from birth up until present day. So I talk a lot about FA and what it was like when I wasn't diagnosed yet. And then when I was starting to feel like, you know, someone's off, then going through the process of doctors and then diagnosis and then pregnancy, being a mom and just mixing all that chaos together.
Yes. Yeah. Indeed. Well, it sounds like it's going to be a great book and probably a great help and comfort to some of the other people out there who may be dealing with FA. So I think that's fantastic. And like I said, we'll put a link to it in the show notes. And I am just so honored to have had both of you here today. This has been such a fun conversation for me to have. And I hope that everyone who's listening had a good time listening to us. And I really just appreciate both of you, you know, sharing yourself and your private journeys in the interest of hopefully helping someone who may be listening. So thank you for that.
Thank you for listening. For more information about the guests you heard from today, go check them out at mda.org/podcast. And to learn more about the Muscular Dystrophy Association, the services we provide, how you can get involved, and to subscribe to Quest Magazine or to Quest Newsletter, please go to mda.org/quest. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd be grateful if you'd leave a review. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button so we can keep bringing you great content and maybe share it with a friend or two. Thanks, everyone. Until next time, go be the light we all need in this world.